The Vietnam War, it's over. Your job's just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
The X-Files is aflame. Years upon years of hard investigatory work. Agents putting themselves on the line, gone up in smoke. Even the poster, a representation of how we want to believe, our guiding edict, reduced to mere simpers, a relic of how that edict has passed us by. But the emotional toll of what Mulder and Scully experienced certainly wouldn't have been as bad if they had been insured through this week's sponsor of the Bloom Files, Geico. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. And I bet it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com. The truth is out there, and here, who knows? Either way, we are opening up the Bloom Files here on Post-Show Recaps, an X-Files first watch slash rewatch podcast. Hello, everybody. Mike Bloom here, looking over the cimbers and the decay of the X-Files. Not the Bloom Files. R.I.P. the X-Files, or I guess the first form of the X-Files. We'll talk about it. But first, so happy to be here with my co-host. You don't have to read my mind to know how much I love her, my wife. Angela Bloom.
Hi.
What was that delay?
Sorry.
You were reading my mind.
I was reading your mind. I was giving you signals from space.
Oh, my goodness. Well, sorry I wasn't so receptive to them.
Yeah, sorry you weren't either.
That sounds so passive. I'm so sorry you weren't receptive to my space signals.
I'm so sorry.
So this is an interesting episode.
Yeah, this is a weird one because this was supposed to be the end of the entire series.
I would assume that the name sort of implies that,
yeah,
right?
So what their thoughts were when they did this was, we're going to end the series and we're going to push it into a movie franchise.
Really?
Yes. So,
why?
I mean,
what?
Who's to say? Well, I work in Hollywood? I don't.
Well, no, I think that makes sense given their mentality now. I feel like nowadays that would not be the case, right? Because I feel like TV has become bigger than movies, that would be almost the opposite.
Yeah.
But I could understand at that point in time of like, nobody's watching the boob tube. Everyone's watching big pictures. Let's make this into a movie franchise.
I'm sorry. Backtrack. The boob tube?
The boob tube. You know, the tubes with all the boobs.
I almost just whipped right past that because I'm so used to you just saying absurd things.
Well, I think we have so much Fox programming on this episode that I think it makes sense to call it the boob tube.
Yes. And so the issue that they found was that the series proved to be much more profitable for Fox than it would be as a movie franchise. So
interesting.
That's why it ended up not ending.
Did they say, so was this like always a plan from Chris Carter's perspective to have it run 5 seasons? Or
you know,
was
I don't think so. I mean, I think that he probably just kind of like went with the flow there, but not sure.
Well, because I know that, and it's actually going to segue beautifully into our opening scene here, because I do believe, though, despite the fact that they're going to keep going on this series, I think we're saying bye-bye to Vancouver as the filming location, right?
Yes, although they will go back to Vancouver in, I think, season 10, but...
Okay, in the reboot?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, but that's the end of an era, though, right?
Back to L.A.!
Yeah, that's weird. They've gone Hollywood in a manner of
speaking. They've gone Hollywood, truly.
So, I'm intrigued. Was it a budget thing? Was it, like, the network wanting to have them closer to home? Why did they move to LA?
Why do you think I know?
Because
I'm not an expert on the makings of television, just the watchings of it.
You know, and maybe it's something like, I don't know, maybe it's like David Duchovny.
Yeah,
like,
probably.
I want to be closer to home.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, also, it's like probably contract negotiation, stuff like that. They had just, you know, made a movie. I don't know. It'll probably like multiple things added to this decision.
Overall, because obviously we're going to get into the movie next week, is this episode the prologue to the movie, or is it more so like we are clearing the deck to start again with the movie?
A little bit of both. So it is the prologue to the movie because they do talk a lot about the X-Files being, you know, shut down and all that sort of stuff. You also are introduced to Diana Fowley, who will be a character like throughout the rest of the series.
Wait, really?
Yeah. I won't go into that too much.
Yeah, that's interesting. We'll talk about that. Why do you introduce a character halfway through your series? Well, like, this is going to be a big character.
Well, they didn't know it was going to be halfway through the series. They thought it was just going to be a character.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they also, you know, have a lot of loose ends that they end up tying in the film. Okay. So there's a lot of things that, like, our questions are opened up here. A lot of stuff with Gibson as well for, like, the future.
Oh, is that kid coming back?
He's coming back, and then he's also coming back, I think, in a future episode in maybe, I forget what series, what season it is, but he's like much older and he's like preteen puberty.
Oh, Jesus. Do you know if he's played by the same?
No, it's the same guy.
Because I really like this kid actor, actually.
Yeah, no, it's the same kid, and I forget what season he comes back in, but he's like basically in puberty at that time.
Of course. Like, I mean,
I feel so bad for him.
Yeah, just catching him at like the most awkward stages of his life.
Yeah.
Well, this is interesting then. So let's send off Vancouver here. And it is interesting because, you know, they filmed everything basically in Vancouver. But I think for the episodes we've watched, this is the first time that they actually have had an episode take place in Vancouver. I'm assuming this is maybe like their love letter to it, right? Being like, we're actually going to have an episode take place here.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
And the stadium is packed for a chess match.
Mm-hmm. It is packed.
do you think is this a hot ticket item?
I think for some people it might be.
Apparently to fill an entire like monster truck stadium.
Yeah, and I would say the thing that I forgot about this episode was how entrenched it was in the chess scene.
Hey, I mean, listen, I know Cigarette Smokey Man's not attending, but he might as well have been because like dude is obsessed with chess metaphors.
Yes, it was a lot of metaphors.
I mean, this is the Queen's Gambit prologue, it seems.
Yeah.
So we have a chess match here between a Russian guy and this kid. It's going to turn out to be Gibson.
Yes.
So we see this shooter guy in the catwalk. And we were both like, who is this guy? I initially thought it was Jonathan Pryce. But actually, upon further research, this is the blood-sucking lawyer from Jurassic Park.
Ah, yes, 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 yes. I did no research. I said to myself, he looks familiar.
Yeah, some white bald guy.
Yes, that's right. That's right. The guy who dies in the toilet.
Yes, exactly. Who was like rafting.
Spoiler alert.
To find John Hammond. No, spoiler alert. Everyone will go see Jurassic Park. It's an incredible film.
Kidding.
He's a blood-sucking lawyer. He's got to die at some point from a catharsis perspective.
You can't say things like he was a blood-sucking lawyer on this episode or on this show.
I guess so, because he's not a vampire.
He could theoretically be a blood-sucking lawyer.
Yeah, well, he's not impervious to bullets. We will know that later on. So we see a little bit of Gibson's ability here. Like, he starts to hear garbled voices in his head, which is interesting. I thought it was like something was being broadcast to him, but I guess it's more so like we're just getting a peek into his head and all the voices he's listening
to. Yeah, and later he describes it as multiple radio stations playing at once.
Oh, what a throwback.
Yeah.
Prior to the days of satellite radio and your knob would get stuck between two stations.
Well, yeah, and I think he's just saying that it's basically like hearing a radio station, then another one, all layered on top of each other, so it becomes very distracting. But for him, he likes chess because people aren't thinking, you know, they're just...
They're not saying what they're not thinking.
Yeah, so his issue with the human race, basically, is that we are talking, but simultaneously have an inner monologue, and that's extremely confusing for him.
So, and especially from like a kid perspective.
Yeah, he's like, I don't understand why people don't say what they think.
Yeah, because that very much is sort of like the naive child mentality of like, well, why is it this way?
we're getting there with a little bit.
He's trying to figure out some rationale. In general, superpowers, would you want to be able to read minds?
I don't think so.
I agree.
I think it's something that if you ask me in a quick second reaction, like, yes, I think, oh, it'd be cool. But at the same time, you need to have that off switch.
Yeah. I think for me, it would, when I think it might alleviate my anxiety, I think it actually might heighten it.
Well, yeah, because it's if you can hear voices, you'd have to learn to control that.
And also, I think ignorance is bliss from a certain perspective.
Truly. Like,
when we find out what people are truly thinking.
Yeah, I don't want to know how evil my friends are.
What Women Want was a cautionary tale.
Oh, what a terrible movie that was.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's keep in Canada, I suppose, right? Because we actually saw at the end of our last week's podcast, it's actually a beautiful segue, despite this being like five episodes later, right? The reveal that Cigarette Smoking Man hiding out in the Yukon or whatever, snowy Canada, and he has been snitched on. He's been found out here.
Yep.
Do they ever reveal in another episode, like, how they found him?
No. No. I don't think so.
Maybe they traced his mail
Someone
or something.
Someone will tell me if I'm wrong there, but like, I don't think it was
that
important.
They put the pressure on that little kid that had to trudge
through
the snow.
Exactly. Yeah.
So they bring in the goon squad. These two guys parachute in with, like, ski masks and guns. Mm-hmm. And Cigarette Smoky Man's trudging out in his PJs. And it turns out that one of the guys who is now working with the syndicate and is trying to bring Cigarette Smoky Man in is Krycek.
Yep. He's gone back. He's a flip-flopper if there ever was one.
Absolutely. Again, this is why I think I'm fine with the amount of Krycek we've seen so far. Because, again, I think I would get tired of the constant flipping back and forth.
Yeah, no, there's so much more Krycek in this series, and I just, like, can't. I cannot.
Fitzy also pointed out to me that Krycek does the weird thing, right, where he, like, pulls off the mask before pointing the gun. I'm not sure why you do that necessarily.
No, and there was probably like a discussion of it too, like beats, like for the actor. And he was probably like, yeah, I'm going to pull the mask off first. And they were like, whatever, dude, just do it.
You'd think like such a merciless, assassin or criminal.
I guess he wanted him to see him.
Like I guess that. So. And he wasn't going to kill him. No. He's just more so saying like, hey, come on back. Maybe he felt like he was a trusting face.
Yeah, I guess.
So again, Krycek is far from a trusting face.
No, he's the worst.
So Mulder is going to find Skinner in his office. One of the final times we're going to be seeing the X-Files office.
Well, yes and no. It gets fixed.
But Skinner is going to ask Mulder basically like, where do you see yourself in 5 years?
Yeah, it's such a weird question.
It's an odd
especially
thing
for Skinner to ask, because it seems like from my perspective, Skinner doesn't really care.
Exactly. Like, it's odd for Skinner to show some interest here. Maybe, I don't know, it's an odd episode.
He's showing his cards a little bit, because I think that for Skinner, he does actually care, but like, he, in the workplace environment, is very like, sterile in the way that he interacts with everybody, because he tries to keep it profesh. Yeah,
and I think, as well, I think maybe he unfortunately jinxes things by being like, wow, this is a really nice office you have here. It'd be a shame if something happened to it.
Yeah, like, basically says that. But no.
No. So in the meantime, though, Skinner is going to, again, I think showing a bit of his hand, tip off Mulder.
Yes, this is right. Yeah.
Our new BFF, Jeffrey Spender.
Another, like, character in my book.
Is the head of this investigation against what happened in the cold open.
Mm-hmm.
He said that apparently he has only been, like, appointed the head of this through someone outside the bureau, aka his daddy.
His daddy.
Yeah, well, he'll confirm
nepotism.
He'll confirm it later on, but, like, I had pretty much assumed that.
Yeah, so basically Cigarette Smoky Man has put Jeffrey Spender on this case, and Spender's like, no, absolutely not. GTFO to Mulder.
Yeah, but Mulder's still...
But he comes into the meeting anyway and is a total dick.
Well, because Skinner tells Mulder, like, hey, just so you know, this thing is going on, and you're not invited, but you're kind of invited by me, when my word supersedes Jeffrey Spender, so...
Well, and, I mean, if they're trying to investigate a shooting, and they're, you know, like, Mulder is really good at that.
Yeah.
He's a good agent.
He's a criminal profiler.
Yeah, like, he's... Just because he's spooky and insane doesn't mean he's still not good at his job.
Though, again, he's not spooky here as much as he is, like... Well, he has a little bit.
Is doing the thing, the Mulder thing, where he likes to, like, be extra spooky for effect.
Right, because he's in this room with agents, right? They're watching the footage, and Mulder...
He loves to say shit like this.
He pulls out, you know, this is a Bruder film. He's like, if you notice in this one frame, the kid's pushing himself back because he detects that the bullet's coming, otherwise he would have been hit.
I mean, it actually is a good flag. Like, it's a very good flag that he, you know, like sees that. And even later, Diana Fowley's like, yeah, no, like you did a good job.
Well, let's talk about Diana Fowley, because here she speaks up.
Ah, Diana.
In this episode, I am so not sure what to think of her other than like, I have to jump to the natural conclusion that she was brought in as the third point of a possible love triangle.
Yes, no, of course. She's brought in as tension because it's an old fling of Mulder's. They haven't ever done that before. They're trying to move into the movie side of things. They're trying to make it like, you know, somebody's coming up on Scully's turf. Like, how's Scully going to react?
Yeah, they really hamper in on that, right? Yeah. When we meet Gibson later on, he's like, oh, one woman likes you and one woman is feeling bad about the other woman or something like that.
Yeah. And so, I mean, you'll see her a couple times more. I mean, she's a character throughout the series, but like, especially when, you know, a lot of this stuff happens between Scully and Mulder. She does die at some point. Oh. Not to like give too much away.
I mean, you definitely did.
Everyone dies. But I don't remember anything about her, really. I mean, she's just, I remember her being kind of annoying because it was very clear what they were trying to do there.
Yeah. I mean, even just down to the name. Like, yeah. Dana Scully, Diana Fowley.
Mm-hmm.
They're basically like, oh, okay, I'm creating a new version of the X-Files, but I can't use the name Dana Scully.
Yeah.
Let me do Diana Fowley.
Yeah, no, totally. And they also, I mean, the actress is pretty good. I like her.
I believe the actress, I think Spencer pointed this out to us. I think she's Tom Cruise's first wife.
That seems right. She looks really familiar. I don't know what she's been in or whatever, but, you know, she looks really familiar.
Yeah. So before.
Oh, she is the agent in Austin Powers, the original Austin Powers.
She's the original. Like,
she's the mom. She's what's her face's mom.
Yeah. She's not Vanessa's Kensington. She's her mom.
Yes.
Oh, interesting.
Got it.
There we go.
Cha-ching.
Perfect. Wow. Okay. So she's the one who like showed up in the.
The one in the. Yeah. The like the younger.
Yeah. When that first scene in the 60s.
Yes. 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 She's his partner in the 60s. And then what's her face's mom in the.
Yeah. Elizabeth Hurley.
Elizabeth
mom.
Hurley's mom. Yeah.
That's so interesting. Yeah. Okay. It's all these 90s movies people just coming in here.
Anyway, she's supposedly, and we learn this out later, a fling of Mulder's.
Who also is, like, involved in parapsychology as well.
Yeah, so they were, like, they discovered the X-Files together, I guess.
Okay.
Or she was there when he discovered the X-Files and, like, she has a very big interest in it, but was one of the, you know, she didn't stick with it. She was like, I gotta go, like, live my life and, like, I don't, you know, if this is gonna be that fruitful, so let me get into other areas.
So, meanwhile, we've got another reunion going on. The Cigarette Smoky Man is back with the Syndicate.
I don't know if he's back with the Syndicate, but he's meeting with the Syndicate.
Yeah, basically throughout this entire episode, the attitude behind the scenes is, I don't like you, and you don't like me.
But we gotta work together.
Yeah, the Cigarette Smoky Man basically comes in, and he has such bravado, right? Mm-hmm. He's like, well, you're trying to kill me, and you couldn't. So, like, I'm basically immortal at this point. What are you gonna do about
it? Yeah. So he and the well-manicured man are basically talking about how there's this thing with Gibson and they want his help, the cigarette-smoking man.
Essentially, yeah. So that's essentially what his job is going to be this episode, is to be the one behind the kidnapping of Gibson. Speaking of Gibson, let's go visit him in this sort of, like, institution? Listen, I'll be completely candid. I was more so concentrating on the episode of The Simpsons that he was watching.
Mm-hmm.
Let me be completely frank about that. It was the episode, I believe it's called The Cartridge Family, in which Homer purchases a gun, thinking that it'll keep his family safer, and it causes quite a bit of a conflict in the household. So, yes, I was admittedly paying a lot more attention to that.
Yeah, not great, but, I mean,
at least it's not Baywatch.
Yes, true. Very true.
Yeah, and so Gibson is a really fun character. I think the kid does a great job of being...
Yeah, the actor's amazing.
Super deadpan, super sassy in particular, and that, I think, comes with this, like, precocious nature.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, I was reminded a lot of Simon Birch.
Who's Simon Birch?
So Simon Birch was a film that is burned into my memory. It's a story about like a kid who is small for his age. I think he had something going on.
That sounds familiar.
Yeah. The reason why it's burned into my memory is because there's like one very specific memory. I think I've told you about this before. There's a moment in the movie where he has a crush on his best friend's mom, and he hits, like, the winning run at a Little League game, and the ball smacks the mom in the head and she dies.
What? I don't think you've ever told me this story.
I feel
but...
like maybe it's you or I forget, or maybe you or Josh I've had this conversation with about. Yeah, for some reason, that's like my formative memory
of the Simon Birch movie. That and also and baseball.
Well, and also he ends up dying because he saved like a bus full of children crashes into a frozen lake.
And this all rings a bell,
and he's
but
small enough to crawl through
yes,
the hole,
I remember
like the back
that.
Door of the bus, but he like gets, you know, hypothermia and dies afterwards.
Yeah. All of this is ringing a bell, but I can't say it's something that I would want to watch again.
Yeah. I can't remember. I think he's played by Jonathan Lipnicki, who this is probably who Gibson more so reminds you of, is like that kid from Jerry Maguire, right?
Yes,
you know, the human
yes.
head weighs however many pounds.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But I love him. He's great.
He's great. And I think he's a perfect response again to like the Mulder deadpan, especially mm-hmm. him responding about Mulder's cheapo chess computer.
Yeah. I also think it is, so he's an expert at chess. He's like a master, yeah. but that's because he can read minds. That's like cheating.
Yeah. A little bit, of just like, he knows what'll happen next.
Yeah. So he can plan.
Yeah. That's true. And again, because unless... Because
the point, I think the expertise at playing chess is anticipating your partner's
being
moves.
Able to look like three steps ahead. And if yeah. someone's thinking, okay, I'll do this, then this, then this.
You'll know, and then you can cut them off at the pass.
Yeah, I guess so. I think part of that is also like planning against
there's
it
some,
as well.
There's some ambiguity as to the morality of his playing
yeah,
chess.
I mean, I think it's also like meeting them halfway, though. Like, yes, you can know what they're doing, but yeah. you also have to have strategies.
It's like
you
can
in
employ. The Incredibles, when the middle child has to... wants to be on the track team,
yeah.
but can't because he runs fast. And that's like morally ambiguous for him to do that. Because that's cheating.
I love these. You're invoking The Incredibles. I'm invoking Simon Birch. I think one is infinitely more popular than yeah. the other one. And that, of course, is Simon Birch.
Uh-huh.
So basically, you know, there's a lot of to-do around here. We see Scully and Fowley. Oh, God, they're so similar. Starting to, like, dance around things. And Scully's going to Scully here and be like, mind readers, this is a ludicrous idea.
Yeah.
And Fowley's like, don't listen to him, Mulder. I trust in you. I'm believing you all along.
Yeah, she's like playing both sides. She's like, I'm conservative, but also I'm just going to tell Mulder whatever he wants to hear because I kind of still think he's cute.
Yeah. And then meanwhile, Spender's also giving it to Mulder, right? Being like, what the hell are you mm-hmm. doing? You're running around like a chicken with your head cut off. Stop jeopardizing yeah. my investigation.
Well, because he goes to visit the shooter in prison, Mulder. Yeah. He goes to visit the lawyer,
blood-sucking lawyer.
And he basically like tells him he can give him immunity in exchange for testimony. But like does he even have the right to do that?
So he's going to later ask, I think, permission from Skinner. Right?
He's
I think he's like asking.
But Spender's not out of total whack here by saying that Mulder's jeopardizing his investigation.
Right. I mean, this is like, this is what happens when you bring Mulder in. He's always going to go a little bit off the table. He might hit someone, whether it be a member of the FBI or someone that he is interrogating. Mulder is a loose cannon. I think as like low energy as he can be sometimes, he really is a loose cannon and can't do anything, including in this case, sitting down with this guy and being like, hey, you know, if you talk, I will offer you immunity. I won't clear with my boss first or the head of this investigation, but sure, I can make it happen.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, well, we're going to get into Gibson showing off his powers, but first, let's go order some breakfast ourselves and take a quick break to hear a word from our sponsors.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So here we are in a room full of strangers, to quote the Bee Gees. And here Gibson is doing a reenactment of the opening scene of Ghostbusters, but in a good way.
Wait, what?
Remembering Ghostbusters when the, you know, when Venkman's doing like the, okay, what card am I holding up right
now?
Oh,
yes, yes,
remember,
yes,
like,
yes.
They're actually doing
the test.
Yes, but it reminds me of that first scene in Ghostbusters.
Yeah, basically like Fowley wants to have him tested for his psychic abilities, his psychological abilities.
Yeah, I mean, they're psychological as well. But yeah, he's not only reading the cards, he's predicting what people had for breakfast, which is odd. That seems a little more, I mean, I guess maybe he asked off camera, like, think about what you had for breakfast this morning. Because I think otherwise, I don't know how you can probe into people's memories to get that information.
Yeah, exactly. But I think it's like, yeah, you have basically, no, if somebody's holding, it's not a memory. It's like what they're seeing right then.
Right. So he probably had to ask. We didn't see him ask, like, hey, what did you order for breakfast this morning? But they probably had to. Because again, it's not him.
I guess. He's or they were just thinking about it.
They were all thinking about breakfast at the exact same time.
Yeah, maybe. They were all hungry for lunch.
Meanwhile, poor blood-sucking lawyer is going to get a note handed to him on a cigarette box that says, you're a dead man.
Yeah, it's not even on the box. It's on, like, the wrapper.
Yeah, they took apart the
Morley
box.
The wrappers.
Yeah, and then wrote on it.
Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah, it's an odd thing where the guard's like, I've got a note for you.
It's a piece of garbage.
Here you go. Scully's going to visit the lone gunman. I do like the effect that, A, apparently I didn't realize this, that the lone gunmen sleep in their lair?
I think some of them do.
I mean, they all do. They were in, like, little cute little PJs when Scully visits them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's, like, their little vibe.
And I love the effect that they had, like, seven locks on the door.
Yeah, because they're paranoid.
And
like, we get it.
Exactly. But basically, Scully's visiting them to provide these test results and be like, is he really psychic?
Is that exactly true? Is he psychic or is there something else going on here? This is where she also gets the intel about Dana.
Yeah, this is where we
Diana, it's
the same Scully too, basically, where she has a past with Mulder. Basically, and we get this pairing scene with Fowley talking to Mulder.
Yeah, we get this scene where they're like holding hands, kind of.
And she's like, you gotta stay away from that Scully. She's not as open-minded as she should be. You deserve better, Moldy.
Yeah, which is why we don't like her, because Scully would never say that about her.
Yeah, and it's also like,
it's petty.
And it feels just more so like less a character and more so to like
a trope.
To less story beat, really.
Yeah, like, oh, we want her to be a little bit of a bitch. Like,
yeah, because she's gotta be the wedge between the two of them and their true love.
But they also, like, this is a weird scene, though, from Scully's perspective, because when she leaves the lone gunman, she basically finds out some shit.
Yeah, she calls Mulder, like, trying to sort of, like,
No, but first she just immediately goes back to the facility and is going to walk in and give him the test results, but she, like, sees them kind of, like, close together and is, like, I guess jealous?
Yeah, it's a weird beat.
I can't read her face doesn't tell me anything.
She decides to clickbait Mulder and is like, hey, Mulder, I got something to deliver to you. I think you'll be very surprised, but I won't say anything else.
Yeah, and she's like, he's like, oh, just come to the facility. And she's like, no, just meet me at work. Like, she doesn't want to see Diana Fowley, I guess, but it's weird.
But they also work together.
Yeah, no, but like, she means like, oh, come back to the office.
Like, she doesn't want to see her immediately, I guess.
I don't know.
As she's pulling out, in comes Jeffrey Spender. And father and son finally come face to face.
Yeah, this is where I guess he followed Spender or he was just waiting there.
Yeah, like, I'm assuming the latter because, you know, when he's going to show up later at the FBI, right? He's like, boasts like, oh, I have access.
Uh-huh.
So maybe it's just like, I have access to the parking garage.
Yeah, maybe.
I suppose. And basically he's like, hey, I know you didn't answer my letters, but here I am. Let me give you some unsolicited advice.
Yeah, so earlier in the episode, he meets him in the hallway and says that he's the one that got him on the case, but he doesn't tell
him. No, he says that later in the episode.
Right, but he meets him in the hallway and tells him, like, he has access.
That's later in the episode.
Oh, so he tells him he's his dad first?
No, that's later in the episode.
So what happens here?
Here, he says, let me give you some advice. You know what pieces you have on the board.
Oh, right. Yeah, because Mulder sees him talking with him and is like, who is that? Who is that?
And he's like, I don't know who that is.
He's like, it legitimately is just some guy.
A mysterious man approached me in a parking lot.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you talk to him? But yeah, basically the cigarette smoking man's going to be like, You're a chip off the old block. You know, be like me. Pursue your own self-interest. And Jeffrey Spencer's like, I don't know who you are.
Yeah.
And no, I'm not like you, mysterious man.
Yeah, it's very weird. It's a weird flex there from him.
I think it's just a reminder of, again, how maybe the cigarette smoking man viewed
right.
Spender as like, this is my protege, this is the heir apparent.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems very clear that Jeffrey Spender, much like we talked about in the first episodes he shows up, like, he's trying to go the more normal route with everything.
It's weird to me because Jeffrey Spender is clearly like who he is now. The cigarette smoking man is like dedicated to like helping, but like that was Mulder for a long time. So yeah. Like, what?
Yeah, I guess, is there
did he not know he had a son?
That's what I'm wondering. Is there a point in time where he found out about his son, or did Jeffrey Spender like just join the FBI?
And well, he's younger too, so he's an up and coming agent.
So maybe he was just waiting for his son to show
to
up
to graduate like, school. I guess.
Okay, great. Now I can finally, you know, go into the nepotism.
So strange. Yeah.
And then there's also the whole thing too, right? Where we didn't know for a while if Mulder was the cigarette smoking man's son.
Yeah.
So we're going to find out, Scully's going to finally make this big reveal mm-hmm. that essentially Gibson's showing abnormal activity in what's referred to as, like, the God part of the brain.
Yeah, so I guess this part of the brain is, like, not used, and when it is used, you have, like, special abilities.
Right, they invoke several names of, like, super geniuses who have been able to utilize their brain power in either more or different ways than us normies, and Gibson is one of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Mulder believes that he can basically unlock all the mysteries of the X-Files because
this is a wild jump from both Mulder and Scully from my perspective of this kid is the key to everything.
Yeah, well, and I think later in the episode they talk about how he's the missing link more than anything, and which I get. That makes sense to me.
That makes more sense to me.
Because genetic code and all of that, blah, 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 blah. But
I feel like we've experienced so many alien-human hybrids.
And not all the X-Files have to do with aliens. Sometimes
exactly.
They're just weird shit.
Oh, yeah. How does this explain Clyde Bruckman?
Yeah, it doesn't.
It's a big umbrella claim for Mulder and Scully to be like, and it's very much, I think it's very much screams to me, like,
setting up a movie
or just like finale thing, right?
Yeah,
this is the MacGuffin, this will be the key to each and everything.
Yeah,
all
and
100 episodes we've done so far,
and also setting up how like it's a big macro concept, so like that's a more of a movie idea.
Yeah, exactly. But Fowley basically says, well, listen, this might be your skeleton key, but it might, you know, might lead to some skeletons.
Yes. Like, if you go in front of the attorney, she basically says, if you go in front of the attorney general and you say that this kid is what he is, that you think he is, like, they're going to close you down.
Yeah,
like,
and
100%.
Also, it's going to draw so much unwanted attention to the X-Files.
Because right now they're flying under the radar. They're able to do what they're like, what does she say? She says it's like, it's like an allowance. It's like
it's basically this idea of, well, they're not doing any harm.
Yes,
so let them just do their thing.
Yeah, but if they go down this road, they'll probably be told they need to stop.
So Mulder is going to now go to the shooter again, mm-hmm. offering him immunity, and this is where Bloodsucking Lawyer makes this confirmation, right?
Yes.
That Gibson is genetic proof, the missing link. It's basically confirmed that he is a hybrid, right?
So I think what they're telling us now is that he is the missing link, in that he's like has genetic material of whatever aliens existed here before they left.
Right. They talked about the early alien astronauts, right?
Yeah. So like, you know how the whole idea of colonization is that there were aliens on this planet, the ice core.
Yes.
And then they left during the ice age because they couldn't survive.
Right.
And then now they're trying to come back.
They're trying to come back to be like,
but
let's take back what's ours.
There's genetic material that was left here that's what's in Gibson, I guess.
So yeah. So basically maybe that's,
or that's what they're saying.
Yeah. So that's the confirmation of, like we said, not everything in the X-Files, but at least like the big mythological
mm-hmm.
idea.
At least
right.
further proof that like the aliens existed on this planet and they're that. The whole them trying to come back thing is like neither here nor there. But
meanwhile, the syndicate's going to confront the syndicate. Is really like has so many sticks up their butts.
But also Mulder says that the genes that Gibson has, all humans have, because we're all descendant from aliens.
Oh,
but,
that's an interesting
but
reveal.
Ours are dormant,
right?
Ours,
yeah,
mine and yours.
I mean, it could be like an X-Men thing, right?
No, exactly, like mutants, like the next evolution.
But no.
Okay,
X-Files men. But we get a small scene here where the syndicate's like, how dare you? Mulder's going to the Justice Department now because of you. And Cigarette Smoking mm-hmm. Man's like, just you wait. It's all a game.
Yeah, and he's like, this is not a game.
Yeah, it is to me. I don't care anymore.
No, clearly. Clearly you don't.
This is where we get this next scene where Scully and Fowley are going to, like, be...
Oh, but before that, the shooter is killed by a shooter in prison.
Yeah, being like, oh, I got another note for you, except there's no note, bang.
Dead.
So Scully is going to be hiding out with Gibson. This is where we get Gibson now watching King of the Hill.
Yeah, did we talk about how he was watching The Simpsons?
Yes. Were you not here for that?
Wow. Wow.
Oh my God. Maybe your memories have been probed.
You know, it's been a long week for me.
It has been a long week. So this is when we get Gibson to talk about before, about like, oh, I like chess because yeah. People don't double talk. You know, the pieces do the talking.
I do like how when they pan to him watching King of the Hill, he goes, this is a great show. We don't get this where I'm from.
Only on the Fox Network. Yeah. You're like, man, what great content we have here.
And he's just like, we don't get this where I am.
Yeah. Well, this is a weird thing. So he said, when he was watching The Simpsons, that, like, he doesn't get this in the Philippines.
Yeah.
What's that story? Why was he in the Philippines?
I think you'll learn more about that.
Okay. I'd assumed it was, like, he was housed on some military base
maybe,
or something.
I don't remember.
So, basically, Fowley is going to take over from Scully and, like, the dolt she is, fall asleep on the job.
Yeah. Not great.
Not even greater... She's going to see Gibson on the window being like, oh, there's a shooter here. And she says, you know, get down. And he's like, oh, it's not for me. It's for you. And she's like, what?
Yeah. Also, Gibson could have said that quicker.
Yeah, well, maybe he didn't appreciate the fact that she fell asleep and was not good conversation.
Yeah, I guess so, maybe.
So
he clearly prefers Scully.
So this is the beginning of the end of the end, as it were.
Yes.
Now we can start to see, like, things absolutely fall apart.
Yeah.
Because first, Fowley is now, like, in critical condition, not dead yet, but it's not looking good.
Yeah, she's like not awake for sure.
Meanwhile, Mulder's going to find out that also the shooter is dead. They say, oh, they found this blank cigarette box, and he's immediately going to suspect the cigarette smoking man.
Yeah. Well, I think the issue also is that when Mulder goes to the Attorney General to get this sort of pardon for this guy, he alerts them to the fact that this guy exists.
Yeah.
And so then they kill him.
Yeah. So then we also find out that the people that took out Fowley, quote unquote, were part of the cigarette smoking man's entourage, and that they took Gibson. Now Gibson sure just like drops off Gibson with the syndicate.
Yeah.
Right? And the syndicate's like, all right, your job is done. And Cigarette Smoking Man's like, no. It's just beginning now. You've called me out of retirement.
Yeah, basically. Like, you came to me. You can't just send me away.
And of course, we get this frustrating moment, right, where Cratchit's like, I could literally... This is, again, out of Austin Powers, right? Like, I have a gun in my room. I can just shoot him right here, right now.
Yeah.
But no, they're going to say, we're going to trap you in the room with one guard and the... The rabid eels with the lasers on their heads or whatever. So they're just going to drive away. But Mulder is going to see the cigarette box and try to put what he thinks is two and two together.
Yeah, but it's not.
No, he's going to, because he saw Spender talking with him in the parking garage, he approaches Spender, throws him up against the wall and rubs box on his face.
Mulder has rage issues.
Yeah, and he's going to be like, you'll be prosecuted for murder. Your hands are coated with blood on this.
Yeah, totally.
And so, surprise, surprise, this time, despite all the other things that Mulder has done, like, this one actually sticks.
Yeah, so... I don't know. Mulder here is, like, very confusing to me. They're trying to set him up as this, like, leading man, so he does a lot of stuff that's like very like bravado-y, but I don't love it.
Yeah, so now we sort of get like an exposition from Scully via phone call as Mulder's just sort of laid out on the couch. Once again, stop me if you've heard this before, the X-Files is being shut down and Mulder and Scully are being reassigned.
And it's all part of the big plan, Mulder says.
Yeah, though, again, this very much reeks to me of the end of season one.
Yes.
Very much when you watch, like, Making the Band and Diddy's like, I'm shutting the band, shutting the studio down.
But then we see the smoking man go to the X-Files office, take Samantha's file out, and then burn it to the ground.
So Samantha's folder, was that just, like, a case that Mulder... had.
It's Samantha's X file.
Okay, I didn't know if it was the file that he took from all those filing cabinets.
I imagine
in the
that's probably inside that file.
Yeah,
file. This is Mulder's file about Samantha, which probably has other files.
Folders
in
within folders, and so this is the scene that you mentioned before, where Cigarette, like, he basically finds Spender in the hallway.
Yeah,
he's like, I'm your dad.
Yeah.
Hey, do you smell smoke?
Yeah, and then the fire alarm goes off and he disappears.
This is pretty, not like it's graphic.
Sad. Yeah,
like you said, very sad and dark.
Yeah, especially when you see the poster.
Yeah, the poster in flames, I think, really did it for me. Of like, This was all of their work. And this was really, I think, just the cherry on top of this poo-poo sundae of, you know, they lost this kid that could have been the link to everything. This woman comes back into Mulder's life, and now she's nearly dead.
Yeah.
The X-Files is getting shut down, and even before he could clear out his office, everything has been burned down.
Yeah. No, it's very... It sucks.
Yeah, and on top of that, like, you see that in the performances. Like, Mulder, I'm sure, is just shocked and stone-faced, but, like, Scully is, like, very emotional about this.
Yeah.
And she just hugs Mulder.
Yeah, and it's like, I mean, Scully is a weird episode here, because she's, like, very, like, about... her, I don't want to say fighting
she's
Diana
Fowler.
Yeah, she's in her feels, I guess. But yeah, I mean, it's all just sucks.
It does suck. And it really sets up rock bottom for this duo. As they, I will admit, I'm intrigued to see where they go from this. Like, we know inevitably that the X-Files are going to open back up. You know, last time this happened, it was through all these garbled, you know, like you mentioned in our intro, right? The alien signals through the radio station in the beginning of season two was what brought them back on board. I'll be intrigued to see with so much other mythos now that has brought us so much forward from season two. I'll be intrigued to see, like, will it be a returning character that brings them back into the fold? Will it be a mysterious new person who says, I need your help?
Well, we'll find out, I guess.
Yeah, so next time we are doing X-Files Fight the Future. Is that the name of the first film?
I think that is the...
Oh, my good God.
I think the next one is just X-Files the movie.
Well, because I think it's X-Files Fight the Future is the first one. I think the second one is X-Files I Wanna Believe.
Oh, yeah, something like that.
But basically, I think people just refer to it as the X-Files movie.
Yeah. Exciting.
I'm excited for this. This will be our first time doing a movie recap. But we're not just doing that.
Yeah.
Because you recommended that we also do season six, episode one, The Beginning.
Yeah, it all leads into it. And I think what we can do is we'll watch both of those and we'll spend most of our time on the movie, but and then kind of end it with The Beginning, which will lead us into season six.
So that's interesting, though, because, again, if the intention behind this was...
Well, the initial intention.
Right. So this wasn't expressly, at the time it was produced, being like, we're going to spin things off. Oh, crap, now we have to come back. This is more so like, well, we can still use this idea, but we have the intention of coming back for season six.
Yeah, I think it was like, we would love to... I think it was all sort of planned out, and then they were like, no, you can't stop. It's too lucrative for us as a network, so you must continue.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see. Again, this is like an odd stuffed sandwich, right, of two episodes, like a giant amount of meat
in
the form of a movie.
Yeah, but I think you'll like it. It's not a today movie. It's a 90s movie, so it is only like an hour and a half.
Allison, we're talking all about 90s movies today, so I think we're in for it.
Yeah.
So we should also mention Spook of the Week. I can imagine that's Gibson, right?
No, I if Krychek's in it, he's the spook.
that's your rule.
Yeah, he's
the Krychek rule.
He's the spookiest.
Yeah, I'm gonna still
Gibson's
say,
too good.
I'm gonna say Gibson because I think purposely he's supposed to be kind of like
spooky in the way that Mulder is.
But
spooky
it's said with love. Look, he has great taste in animated television.
I don't know.
Again, next week, I know this was a bit of a shorter podcast as we did two episodes, but we're doing a doubleheader next week and a big doubleheader at that. We're covering the movie and the first movie, I should say, and then we're covering season six, episode one, The Beginning. I'm sad to leave season five behind. I really
like
season
five. Yeah, it's a great
season.
I love it. I think that it's one of the best, but...
I think season five...
Season six is good, too. You'll like season six.
Yeah, I think season five sort of has a lot of what I wanted from the X-Files, where I think season three had some, like, interesting, kind of goofy things. Season four was well done, but dark beyond
Very
all
dark,
imagination.
Yeah. And this Much was more serious.
And this was sort of like a mixture between the two, right? Like, you had... things like postmodern Prometheus and Bad Blood, which were a little more on the lighter side.
Love those.
But then you have, you know, all this, like, the Christmas Carol Emily stuff, which is emotional. So
you have a lot of time travel-y stuff.
Yeah, and I think, listen, like, I have been persuaded by your opinions, but I think this might be my favorite season so far.
Hey, We'll see.
Hey. So again, next week, the movie, season 6, episode 1. You know how to write into us. Our offices aren't burned down. BloomFilesatPostShowRecaps.com. Yeah, hopefully I didn't manifest something. XFilesatPostShowRecaps.com. You can also tweet us at AngePelagi, at a Mike Bloom type, at PostShowRecaps. Thank you all so much for listening as we knock another season down, 5 seasons down, 4 to go, as we approach the second half, I suppose, or a new beginning of the X-Files. So excited to get into it next week. Thank you all for listening. Thank you to Corey B for his fantastic theme music. We'll talk to you all next week. Until then, case closed.